You're listening to Climate Camp Radio 2009 and...
A little later than usual.
Yeah. And we are Dissident Island, whittled down to the bare bones, the skeleton.
The two essential cogs of the wheels. I don't know.
Harsh. Well, so, yeah, we've got a great show lined up for you. Loads of interesting stuff going on. And, of course, as soon as we start broadcasting, this is Climb Camp Indeed. You can hear people, a samba band in the background, obviously. But some of the stuff we have lined up for you includes an announcement on the Swoop from someone from the media team, Natalie. The King's North space folk. Basically, there's a space that's opened up in Gillingham, and it's to do with basically outreach and communication in the community around King's North. We're going to hear from Martin, activist trauma support on activist burnout and just how to deal with that. And Ollie has a lot to say about land stuff. But first, I think we're going to hear from Danny, who's going to give us a little ditty.
I'm going to do a little poem. So I'm going to like to introduce this poem by introducing you to a few words you may not have come across before, because obviously I'm quite interested in words. So these are some I shared with people earlier today. So there's one fantastic word, and this word is cuniculus. And if you've not heard this word before, cuniculus is an amazing word. It means full of rabbits. So I just love it, and I keep trying to wonder how exactly did that word ever come into being. And I try and drop it into conversations when I can. And another beautiful word is boanthropy. And if you haven't heard the word boanthropy, it's a real word. It means the delusion that one is an ox. So if you believe you're an ox, you're suffering from boanthropy. Again, a very useful word in many occasions. And the final word I'd like to mention is kakistocracy. K-A-K-I, kakistocracy, which means rule by the worst members of society. So this poem is called Election Day. It doesn't feel like a choice.
Please, tell me how I'm empowered, how I'm using my voice as the Labour Party stumbles through its awkward closing dance and we all await the chance to watch the next load of gloating, scapegoating, moat-owning stoats shoveled into government by default or by accident, by a public with plenty of spleen to vent, giving Westminster rinsers a kick in the ballots with a vote for Esther Ranson, Terry Waite, or Timmy Mallett? Are you secretly hoping that someone, the workers, Joanna Lumley at the head of an army of Gurkhas, will sweep in and save us from baby-faced Dave? Some people say we're sleepwalking into a Tory government. I'm shouting and screaming all the way, but hey, maybe between now and May we'll get a sudden storm of electoral reform so the whole thing's no longer decided by a few thousand voters residing in a handful of sweet little swing seats. And maybe the media will stop feeding us the same old race between one horse and pretty much the same horse with a different face and start giving alternative opinions some space. Probably best not to hold your breath, unless asphyxiating to death seems easier to handle than seeing the Tories bathed in glory, which would be understandable. How did it come to this? Is this what generations were arrested and tried for, fought and died for? The right to swap one sorry crop of planet-plundering, war-mongering, wealth-concentrating bastards for another lot who'll do the same, only harder? But enough whining. I'm here to register my vote. Here it is. I vote for justice and peace. I vote for not being beaten up by the police. I vote against oil and warfare and pride and humanity's slide into mass suicide. I vote for the seasons. I vote for the sky and the thoughts in her head and the glint in his eye and all of the things they're not offering us. Our dreams are too big for their ballot boxes, for once every 4 year penciled in crosses. Where do I write in the world that I want? So I'll vote with my body, my hands, and my words, with all that I do and all that I say. I won't vote when I'm told. I'll vote every day. I'll vote by getting in the way of all their awful plans and schemes, with a banner or a spanner or a tape of MC Hammer and a tone-deaf karaoke team. I'll be the grit in their piston, the glitch in their system, the lump of toast in their machine. Every word and every deed, a quantum of democracy, a little vote. Voting early, voting often, but not voting all alone. We've been growing quietly in the cracks. It's time to break the stones. It is your democratic right to not go down without a fight. Don't sit there feeling powerless. They can't ignore you when you vote by camping on their duck island and pissing in their moat, because every day's election day. You coming out to vote? Yes, I said every day's election day. You coming out to vote? Thanks. Cheers. Thanks for listening.
Nice one, dude.
Yeah. So we actually have Robin in the studio with us as well. And you dropped by to give us a little bit of an update on what's happening with the Vestas occupation and the factory, ex-factory workers. And so, yeah, what's the latest on that?
Okay, well, the actual occupation of the factory ended a couple of weeks ago, but the kind of campaign to have it reopened and like the workers want it nationalised and reopened, you know, that's what they're fighting for. That's going on apace. There's the island on the Isle of Wight are very much for it and behind it, but there's a, you know, one thing at the centre of this dispute, which is the site itself. So there've been, you know, speaker meetings and like little actions and protests all around the country, and there's a lot of popular support for this. But what's going on right now is that the factories, the physical factories at the heart of it, like there's been a 24-hour picket around there to make sure that kind of Vestas doesn't just like wrap it up, shut it down, clean it out, and, you know, move on. So tomorrow or this week, I guess there are two major things that, like, for those of us who are kind of like see that to win this, we need to actually keep sight of the actual factories, the blades that are produced. On the there's a big warehouse, like on the docks at Southampton, where the blade, you know, the workers didn't know how many blades were actually left because the manager don't tell them such things, but we were caught by surprise about a week ago and found out that there were like 600 blades being shipped out from Southampton to the United States. Like three ships have already gone, carrying like about 300 blades between them. Then we're expecting more ships to go out this week. Also at Newport, the factory that was occupied, some of the fewer blades, but they've been finished, and there's a mould in there that we believe that management wants to sort of take out of the factory. Like, we're determined to stop this, you know, for a few reasons. One is to sort of like, yeah, like Danny said, put a spanner in their works, you know, to show that, you know, we're not just going to sit by and let them like carry on like business as usual, that, you know, things have gone far beyond that and people are willing to actually intervene in that, you know, and say that your prerogatives, you know, aren't there to just be accepted. It's also to insist that actually, hang on a minute, this is, we see this by now as theft. These are our blades, they're not moving, you know, and being cashed in on, you know, like as you wish. They're our blades and they're staying, and that, you know, any money that is made out of them will go towards reopening like the factories on the island. So this, and it's, you know, it's to say to the government and to Vestas and to, you know, the people who support us, that we're serious about this, the workers are serious about this, the people who've been supporting them are serious about this, that the, when we say we want like wind turbines and green energy and green jobs, we mean, you know, like the one thing that Vestas shows is that you can produce wind turbines, but these same people still operate for their profit margins. You can't really expect them to take, you know, the environment into consideration when they treat people with such shit, you know, with such contempt. And so this is about asserting that, yes, we want wind energy and we want like the growth of like green energy, but we want that under workers' control, and we want wind turbines to go, we want these blades at Southampton and Newport to end up where they were destined to go to, and stopping them is about asserting that, you know, that these blades and the production here, you know, don't belong to Vestas management anymore. They belong to the workers and the communities that have fought for them.
I was just going to ask, I think Vestas has come up at a very important time for sort of the whole movement, as it were, because it does encapsulate an awful lot of the worker issue with the actual, the environmental science issue. So I think it's been very important, and it's been received well or it's been populated by a lot of activists down there. What do you think of that?
Well, it's been like really quite inspiring, I guess, like from me personally, where I'm standing, I guess, coming from like a Labour movement trade union background, but having been involved in kind of climate camp for, you know, the last couple of years, it's kind of almost feels like something has kind of like come to fruition a bit, you know. And for a lot of people in climate camp, you know, that have been like, yes, climate change is serious, we don't trust, you know, the governments, the corporations, you know, the political parties particularly to do it, and that we want to see some more direct action happening. And then there have been some of us who have come from different movements saying, yep, that's all well and good, but there's still, you know, our understanding of capitalism is that it's a class society, and that, you know, class oppression stands, do you know what I mean, like, you know, still stand strong, and that you won't have any kind of sustainable economy when it's run for profit and without, do you know what I mean, people organising things themselves. This dispute, I guess, has like been that form of like direct action in the workplace by workers, do you know what I mean, that's been met with solidarity from the traditional labour movement, where the direct activist movement has kind of like, I think, been decisive in keeping this going, you know, from making sure, you know, when people were like, oh, we can't take food in, can't have food in, we'll be arrested. You know, you had a group of climate camp activists saying, well, actually, you know, here you go there, you know, and yeah, got the food in. And that kind of spirit of things has really kept, you know, been, I think, at the core of it, even from, like, you know, the kind of kitchens that, like, have been set up there, which literally is a kind of core down in Newport. It's been a hub of activity, and I think a lot of climate camp activists have brought their kind of skills to bear, their understanding that if people have kind of resources and a setup that kind of facilitates their activity, you know, tea on the boil, food going, things that people can easily neglect, do you know what I mean, then they wouldn't have that vibe where people have been able to come from all different political tendencies and engage and feel like part of a common community of struggle.
Everyone loves a cup of tea, though.
That's so true. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in and giving us this information, this update. Is there anything essential that you want to remind people listening?
It's difficult to do some of this over air, but the basic picture is out in the open that there are blades leaving from Southampton, there are blades being moved out from Newport. That's all in the open. I'd suggest get yourself to Climate Camp. There are meetings 12 o'clock every day in the Northwest tent to get an update about what's going on by way of action. People are going down to Isle of Wight straight away. People are, you know, keeping alert to what's going on. There are various different ways to get in touch. If you look on the Save Vestas blog, there are numbers there, or just better still, just come to Climate Camp.
And just out of curiosity, how are the workers who occupied for so long and did so fantastically? They're all okay?
They're brilliant. I mean, I think it's, I mean, they're around. Some more of them are arriving on camp tonight. I think it's been a massive, well, it's been a massive learning experience for us all, but I think this whole, like, being thrust into something, do you know what I mean? Like, and literally just acting on that basic instinct that actually something has to be done here, and then having this whole big thing kind of, like, you know, develop and grow, like, you know, from like a situation where you thought, like, that was it, just another factory closure, you know, this, that and the other, what people normally do in these situations, that's all been changed, and they found themselves at the centre of something. And I think, like, it's immense pressure, but, like, people are very much kind of growing with it, and it's, you know, pretty, feel pretty privileged to be involved in this.
Great.
You can tell them Dissident Island think they're great.
Dissident Island think you're great, and we'll tell them in person.
Well, thank you very much, and have fun at camp. Okay, and so now we're going to go into some pre-recorded stuff. Well, pre-recorded, it was probably like 4 hours ago, basically. But yeah, here's Natalie from the media team on the Swoop, and then we'll hear from the Kings North space folk. Okay, Chickpea, Climate Camp Radio 2009, and I'm standing here with a member of the media team. What is this big Swoop thing announcement? What? Just tell us, because I have no idea what's going on.
Well, it's very exciting. It's the third Swoop of the year, and it's going to be the biggest one yet, because on the October 17th and 18th, we're going to go to a coal-fired power station, and we're going to shut it down with hundreds and possibly thousands of people.
Oh, wow, that sounds really exciting. But why is there being announced? What's being announced today? What's the big sort of...
Well, the big announcement tonight is we're finding out which one we want to shut down.
Oh.
So there's been an online vote, sort of along the lines of Britain's Got Direct Action, and thousands of people have been voting, and tonight we're going to find out whether it's Ratcliffe-on-Soar in Nottingham or whether it's Drax in Yorkshire.
Okay, so which one are you banking on then?
Well, I'm kind of rooting for Ratcliffe because it's owned by E.ON, and I think E.ON needs to be shut down because they're trying to build new coal-fired power stations.
Okay, so is this Swoop going out on, like, mainstream media then as well? Have people been interested out there in corporate media land?
Yes, in corporate media land, people are quite interested. They're not quite on the same wavelength as a lot of activists, so they're kind of wondering, why are you announcing it publicly? And we're just saying, but, you know, it's about time. Everyone wants coal, you know, to go away. It's the dirtiest form of energy. We need to shut it down. It's wrong, and we need to stop it.
Cool. So what else is going on with your media team at the moment? Still getting lots of journos on site and doing all that stuff? And
yep, we're still having photographers go through, some print journalists come through. Yesterday we were on Women's Hour. We've been on the, you know, BBC in Russia, BBC in China. Sort of, we're going worldwide, and we're still dealing with the journos.
Cool. So how has your camp experience been so far?
It's been great. Things are pretty a bit more mellow today than they were at first, but things will pick up soon once there's more actions going out there, so I'm looking forward to seeing some action in the coming days.
Cool. Are you going to check out the Kaylee tonight?
You betcha.
Okay, I'll see you there then. Thanks very much. Camp Radio 2009, and I'm sitting here with people who are setting up a space to do with Kings North. What is this space, and why are you setting it up?
I can read the leaflet that was stuck in the toilet, if that'll help.
Oh, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, okay. Tipping Point is a mini climate camp in a shop.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Who wrote this?
Ben's just manual labour, he doesn't do anything.
It did come out of climate camp last year, though. It is a kind of direct result of climate camp last year, in a way, and a follow-up and a way of keeping that going.
Okay. So, obviously, last year, King's North Climate Camp, and this year, you've opened up a space close to King's North to interact with the local community. Is that the idea behind it, one of the ideas?
Yeah, exactly. So it's right in the town centre of Gillingham, which is just opposite King's North, on the other side of the river, and a centre of the Medway towns where most of the population by King's North lives. So, yeah, right on the high street. So it's very public space, sort of getting out to the masses in the area, basically.
Okay. And what kind of things are happening in this space? Like, is it, describe it for people out there, what would they find if they just rocked up to your doorstep at some point?
At the moment, we've got a set of exhibitions. We've got a nice shop front that goes quite a long way back. We've got free tea and biscuits for people who come by and want to chat. And we're also beginning to set up more regular projects for people that want to get involved in different kinds of action on a local level. So that we're hoping it's going to be a point for people to find out about sustainable living, to train up for direct action in the area. We've got a nice big cellar, we can store canoes. We've got the river just up the road from us. It's basically a really good hub for people to get motivated about and prepared for King's North, as well as actually experimenting with ways of reaching a totally inaccessible group of people to us normally on their own home turf. So, yeah.
Okay. How has the response been then with locals?
Well, at the moment we're kind of set up in a way which kind of appears a bit like an art gallery because there's a bunch of exhibitions in there. And people find that quite different to what's in the high street, so they're very curious, they come along, they look in the shop display window, and we kind of go out and get them and start talking to them and bring them inside. The response has been generally really, really positive. It's been surprisingly positive in a way. There has obviously been some kind of conflict-y type situations where people have... there's one particular woman, for example, who... her sister had climate campers pissing in her front garden last year, so somehow she's written off the entire kind of climate change movement on the basis of someone pissing in her garden, and we've had to deal with her. But generally, people have been really, really good. And although at the moment it's just kind of these exhibitions, people are very interested to see how it develops, and we've told them that we'll have like a swap shop and a pedal pad internet cafe and a pedal pad laundrette and various things which hopefully people get engaged in and come in. And that's all an opportunity to start talking to them. And already we've started to build up the connections that we hoped we'd be able to build up, that in the future will be a kind of support base. And, you know, ideally you're going to meet the person who's got a farm that backs onto King's North or owns 100 metres stretch of road that they have to pass by or something, you know, that's going to be really critical in stopping King's North. We haven't met that person yet, but, you know, we just got there.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's lots to setting up networks and just meeting people. Also, we in Activist Land just have so much embedded information that isn't necessary everywhere, so the outreach part, yeah, definitely.
Just that also the local group have had a really good response to us, because there was a group set up around shortly before the climate camp last year,
King's North Climate Action Medway.
And they've basically, now that we've moved there, they have voluntarily doubled their meetings so that they're now happening twice a month, and they're bigger than they've ever been. So there's, you know, there's a lot of enthusiasm, and we're hosting those meetings, and we're getting them coming in a lot and helping us out with stuff and just sharing a lot of ideas and building quite close relationships with them. And a lot of them are involved in local politics and councils, and a lot of them are sort of fairly influential figures and stuff. Plus, we've been reaching out for very different age groups. We've had a lot of kids in, and we've been doing some quite successful kind of arty crafty workshops. Like particularly, recently with the Vestas, we did sort of Vestas awareness thing with making little windmills with kids, things like that.
Oh, that's cute. Okay, so what is the plan for the future then, besides these like techno gadget toys that are sustainable energy things, and like, do you have any specific sort of ideas of doing any actions, or has that even come up yet?
Well, we're hoping to be quite community-led, and one of the things that we did first was go out into the high street and just ask people what they thought about climate change in Kings North, so that we could actually get a sort of realistic picture of what they knew and what they wanted. We turned that into our window display, so hopefully that's going to help people speak to each other. It's an ongoing conversation that we're going to keep changing. But we're also talking to the local group and to other people that come in just to look at the exhibition about what they want. We're thinking about things like having a cooking club, getting involved with the local allotments group and making that available to people who are interested. So kind of very basic transition towns hype models, I guess, to a certain extent, but also definitely looking at direct action training and working out how we can build on that, and probably doing a critical mass ride to the actual factory on a regular basis, so that we can talk to workers and get people using their bikes in the area and that kind of thing. So yeah,
sounds very exciting. So if people want to come and visit, what's your address? Where can they find you on the internet and in real life?
Okay, well, on the internet we're on tippingpoint.co.cc, and you can find the email address on there. Our physical address is 46 High Street, Gillingham, which is like a 5-minute walk from the station. You just walk down the high street, which is pedestrianised, and you'll find us opposite Peacocks.
Nice. Last words. How's your climate camp experience been so far?
It's like the Big Green Gathering.
But not.
It's definitely less climate camp and more Big Green Gathering this year.
Yeah, okay. Nice observation. Anyways, thank you very much for talking to me. Good luck with the space. Go ahead, introduce yourself.
Okay, hello. I'm not going to say who I am. I'm going to say I'm Mrs. Anonymous.
Tell us.
Okay, then. I'm going to introduce the Rambling Raffle of Resistance, which is a big open action, a big super fun, amazing action on Tuesday. What it is basically we've got 22 targets for the whole camp this week, and we don't think that we can manage all of them, and we don't know how to choose because we hate them all the same. So we're going to put them all into the target tombola, which is going to produce at random our next target throughout the day. So do you want me to give you the details of times?
Yes, please.
On Monday evening at 9 in the main marquee, we're going to have the first spin of the tombola and announce the first...
Are you going to have some cheesy music in the background?
I'm not going to reveal anything just yet, but it's going to be exciting and it's going to be fitting.
Oh.
Yeah. So in the main marquee we're going to be announcing that, and then that's going to be the first location. So that's where we're going to start the day. And then we're going to meet at the main gate on Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. Early start to get in for the beginning of working hours. We're going to get in, go down on the train, should be very fun.
and then we'll
get to our first location, and then yeah, actions will be popping up all over the place. Who knows what's going to happen?
Very exciting. So you're asking people to come and see what target is revealed from this very random draw from the 22. Do you have a sort of preference? Like, are you really hoping that one of them... Are you going to fix it, for one thing? You could fix it, you know?
We're going to see what happens over the next few days, I think. Mm-hmm. I think we like the leaving it to chance aspect.
Yeah.
I think we like... Because it's a bit of a lottery, and we like that kind of it could be you aspect.
Yeah.
So there's 22 of them. We want them all to know that it could be any of them because we hate them all.
Okay.
So
just to give us a background for people who don't know what these 22 targets are, what are they for people out there who don't engage in the activist community 24/7? A lot of people here.
Okay, well, there's obviously a lot of them. What they are is basically some of the people who are the most powerful in kind of promoting, maintaining climate change, basically. Yeah. They are the big bad guys in the climate change game. They're the ones that have a lot of power.
Okay.
So like we're talking about the climate exchange, and we've got like BP and Shell, lots of headquarters, lots of bank headquarters that are investing a lot of money into a lot of really bad things for climate change. But yeah, there's a whole level of detail that I could go into, but I think what we can say is that they're the powerful bad people in this game.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you very much for letting us know, and I'll be tapping you on the shoulders to find out lucky winner. And yeah,
we'll see what happens.
Yeah, cheers.
See what Chance produces.
Great. So first off, it's the 31st of August. Forgot to say that at the beginning of the show. Thought you might like to know that. Or actually, it's the 30th, isn't it? Is it the it's the 30th. Did I say the 30th? It's been a long day.
It's Patrick's birthday day.
Yeah, it's Patrick's birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yay. Hope you're enjoying a wintry environment and a beer. Anyways, and I just wanted to mention also that the music that we're playing on today's show is all recorded from the gig that the Interterrestrials did here at camp, which was totally kick-ass. It was very, very fun. So, yeah, we're going to now listen to Martin on Activist Burnout. Chickpea here with Clem Camp Radio 2009, and I'm talking to someone from Activist Trauma Support. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, hi, I'm Martin Shaw.
Hi, great. So why are you here on site? What is your purpose, and what do you do at Climate Camp?
Oh, to create a revolution.
Great.
But the part of that I'm doing is, when you're trying to create a revolution, the forces of the state will obviously want to keep their power and privilege, and will use the full force of the state and that brutality to beat us down if we start being effective. And that has both physical and psychological effects. The main thing that I'm focusing on here is dealing with the psychological effects of police brutality. However, it's not just police brutality that has a psychological effect on activists at a camp like this. Sleep deprivation, personal conflict, drunks in the night, any number of things can create mental stress. So there's any number of mental health issues can come up on a site like this with the kind of stress. Fortunately, this year it's not as stressful as last year. And not as physically violent as last year, anything like it. So a lot of that work.
There's loads of people that are burning out. Give us a scenario of a burnout, for example, that could happen in a activist camp like this.
When people take on responsibilities here, sometimes those responsibilities can seem endless and continuous, and it seems that if other people don't take over, then you have to carry on doing it. Mm-hmm. But often that's because you're doing it, people don't take over, or because you have all the information, people can't take over. Mm-hmm. And it's very important to share responsibility. So A, for example, if the police arrest you or you get taken out for any other reason, you're not the only person with that information. Mm-hmm. Or you find some lover and go wandering off because you want to go make love for the next 3 days. No, you want to, so all the information shouldn't be in one head. It's just bad practice. Mm-hmm. And it can lead to extreme stress. So these things should be managed in groups. We can check in with each other. Mm-hmm. We can share the responsibility and get away from this feeling that an individual has to do everything, because that's not good practice and it's unsustainable.
And which leads to things like sleep deprivation, not eating properly,
exactly.
Not taking care of yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you see somebody who's sleep deprived, A, getting them good food, great help. Getting them water instead of constantly drinking tea and coffee, getting them water because they'll be, you know, get the toxins out of their body because they'll be producing lots of chemicals that are pretty unhelpful. They get you through a crisis, but they're quite unhelpful. You need to piss them out afterwards. get them plenty of water and fruit, and then really encourage them to lie down. Get them a nice tent, make them nice and comfortable, check in on them, you know?
Great.
General loving and attention.
So give us a sort of scenario, like, if someone is feeling kind of burnt out, they come to you, what can they sort of expect to happen? What are you going to actually do to help them?
Mm-hmm. Firstly, acknowledge that burnout is a very serious issue. Mm-hmm. And that this all movements attract amazing people. And when you realize that the world is about to be destroyed, or the people are getting killed all the time, or women are being raped, or whatever, you suddenly, when you have that awakening, there's a feeling of obligation that you personally have to save the world. And I'm very much part of that, and it's brilliant, and that's what makes us so amazing. However, when we're preaching sustainability on all levels, apart from self, and you strip mine your own resources to the point of total exhaustion, that is unsustainable activism. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be in this for the long haul, if you think that all your life is going to be in struggle, which I do, then I take my time. I enjoy myself, I relax. After this, I plan to do nothing apart from relax. I'm going to take it very seriously, be seriously irresponsible, you know, just lie around in bed with my lover, eat very good food, sleep a lot, watch crap television, probably consume more than I should do, maybe even go to a supermarket and buy stuff that I'd much more like to go skipping and get it, but, you know, let myself off the hook. If I need some AA batteries, I might even buy them, or, you know, let myself off the hook for a few days whilst I seriously take recovery.
Mm-hmm. And so when someone comes to you, the first stage then is to acknowledge the burnout.
To acknowledge that people burn out at camps like this. Mm-hmm. And if you really burn yourself out, then you may well be lost to the movement. And this movement loses far more people to self-inflicted harm, burnout, than it does to fascists or police or anything else. So we are literally our own worst enemy. But the solution, and the irony of this, so we're our own worst enemy, but the solution is oh so easy. You just sleep, relax, eat good food. But that's the simple stuff. The harder stuff is to balance this idea. We have to save the world, but we have to save ourselves at the same time. And this is not some kind of self-indulgent nonsense. It's serious, difficult work you have to do to persuade yourself that you can let go, that you're not the only one who can do it. And but maybe sometimes when you get yourself in that position, when you feel you're the only one who can do it, it's because you're being dominant and hierarchical. And that's also an unhealthy practice that we should be trying to eliminate in our practice.
In every aspect of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So can you give us some suggestions as to how to get out of this mindset of everything has to happen now? Because I know that theoretically I completely understand what you're saying,
mm-hmm.
but it's very difficult to actually practice it. So mm-hmm. what are some pointers that have worked for you?
Well, the thing is, I've burnt out 3 times. So it's not that I learned the first time or I learned the second time. It took me 3 times. So it's not that I want to sort of preach about it. You know. When you start getting tearful, or that's not when you, or when you see your friends starting getting tearful very easily, when you can't make decisions, when everything seems overwhelming, when you're feeling cynical, all those are indications you made me close to burnout.
Okay.
And ironically, you often can't sleep because your mind is full of all the things that you, in inverted commas, should be doing or could be doing. And there's next to the City of London, there's 1,000,001 things you could or should be doing.
Mm.
So, you know. The thing is, I'm not advocating lunching things out. If you've taken on something and you are going, okay, I think I'm getting burnt out here. You need to hand those things over carefully. You need to write down everything you know, all those little things in your head, all the contacts you have. You need to write it down and hand it, or verbally communicate to somebody. You need to hand over well, not just lunching it. Lunching it's something else. That's just having responsibility and getting pissed and forgetting to go and do a gate shift, for example, or just not doing the research you're doing, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's lunching it.
Yeah.
That's not responsible activism at all. That's not sustainable because people hate you.
So, sort of acknowledge the fact that you're close to burnout or burning out, hand over your responsibilities, get all the stuff in your mind onto a piece of paper or to another human being who will hopefully take over some of your tasks so that the burden is alleviated from you. And then what?
Relax.
Relax.
Have a good time.
So,
but let's sleep. Sleep is so brilliant. It's free. Doesn't take any carbon, is anti-capitalist, can be done almost anywhere, you know, it's a wonderful thing, and it's that resource is there.
Mm-hmm.
For people who know about batteries, and some quite a lot of people do here, if you take a battery sort of around 12 volts, around sort of 8 hours, if you take it down to its sort of, you can take it down to almost knackered and it will recover the next day if you give it enough charge. However, if you take the battery down below its voltage and keep it there for some time, that battery's finished forever. Mm. So that battery, that person, that wonderful peak, that person is finished forever. And that is a tragedy. A, because you've screwed your battery, mm-hmm. which cost you a lot of money, cost that person a lot of money, and the resources to make it, and then it's ruined. Mm-hmm. Much, much better to recharge that battery.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. So if people are... Well, I guess my first question should be, how did you get into this aspect of activism? How did you get into trauma support?
Well, this is a slightly different subject. I was involved in an action against the G8, blocking a road with a climbing action. The police cut the rope that I was hanging from. I fell 65 feet and broke my foot, pelvis and back. And my partner at the time, who was on the other end of the rope, saw me fall, thought she was going to fall. I was badly physically injured, and I got loads of support because it was obvious physical injury, blah. She was terribly injured psychologically, however got almost no support because there was no blood, basically. I had no idea of post-traumatic stress, nor did she, etc. She finally acknowledged it, finally got help. It was inappropriate help. We realised how lots of therapists don't actually know, or they're talking nonsense or unhelpful. And then just realised that in our movement, we constantly put our situations in situations that get enormously stressed. Occasionally enormously stressed, mm-hmm. more commonly systematically stressed, systematically deprived, systematically under threat of, under severe threat. If the police are about to steam in, that's very dangerous. Or you've got some idiot kicking at the fence who's, offering to do terrible things to your mother. That is stressful.
How would you recommend people get into trauma support and become helpful in that respect? So, like, if people want to do something about this issue, what would you recommend they go out and do?
There's activist trauma support, which doesn't just deal with the climate camps, it deals with activism and in general. But then in the climate camp, the manifestation is the well-being space, where we're doing emotional first aid, if you like, where it's the individual is the most important person, their well-being is our focus. So if people need that kind of support in any way or think their friends need it, then they can come along there. Okay. We're not giving counselling. This is not a safe space. We have got some counsellors, but we're not doing it here. We're just doing what's called active listening, letting people talk. And in that way of verbalising the issue, rather than having an internal dialogue, that can often help enormously. And then providing a space where people can literally lie down or have a massage. We're also organising a number of different alternative therapies and treatments and complementary therapies that people have gotten offered. So we've got a rota that people can sign up to, either sign up to get a treatment or sign up to give a treatment. If people think they've got an aptitude for this work, then they need to come along and have a chat with us. And 7 o'clock every night we have a meeting and have a chat with us. Surprisingly and wonderfully, yesterday some 16-year-old young women came along, and now we're doing some active listening training with them. So we're having sort of a range of different people, different skills. So you don't need to be an expert in trauma or have a degree in psychology, although it obviously helps. But we've got reading materials for people to do. We work together in teams, so people don't sort of feel out of their depth. We're sort of helping to supervise people, etc.
Oh, nice. And how about out in the real world when we're not camping in a field? Where can people find you?
So activist-trauma.net is our website. So they can find there. We've got a phone number. We do debriefings for groups. So if an affinity group has been in an action that has got, there's people feel stressed by it, we can help them debrief afterwards. We've helped people coming back from Palestine, Israel-Palestine, in debriefings. We've done a debriefing after the G20 for people who were sort of attacked by the police then, or witnessed this. It's important to say that people who witness violence often suffer psychological effects as well. And yet they also feel guilt and shame because they're suffering effects but didn't actually have any physical violence themselves. So it's very important to acknowledge that happens. That really does happen, and it's very normal.
Great. Any last words?
Look after yourselves and do great actions.
Great. Thank you.
good stuff there.
Yeah, Martin's kick-ass, and it's amazing the resources that are available on site. It's just very well thought out and planned, and that's hardly surprising considering the number of people who are here doing all sorts of really amazing work, and it's quite a privilege in a way to be able to be here. And yeah, I just wanted to say that and maybe give a shout out to people that have been really, really helpful for us. Ben, yeah. What up?
All right, Ben, dude. Ben, yeah. The builder.
And John, Islander.
Yeah.
But he needs a big up as well, and obviously
Colin as well, though.
Yeah, yeah, definitely Colin. And
big up to George here as well, from Birmingham.
Yeah, fucking definitely.
Okay. All right, cool. So,
so we're going to listen to one more track and then...
this is another one from the main marquee the other night, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Good one.
Big up all squatters as well, of course.
So, fucking Squatty Black Heath, eh? Fucking crying out for it, wasn't it? I don't think I've seen it like this since the Peasants' Revolt. I think I'm going to have to dedicate this next song to the crew who've put all this together. Big them up. There must be fucking loads of them working together to do this. Fucking fantastic. And what they proved is, it's still time, more than ever, to fight for squatters' rights. I'm a little bit of a Waters!